Welcome to the Construction Technology News of the Week with Nathan Wood and Charlie Dunn.
Construction is the world's oldest industry, but spends the least amount of money on innovation. When we realized people outside the construction industry didn't typically associate construction with technology like virtual reality, apps, and robotics, we started the Contech Crew. Each week, we bring our listeners the latest in Contech news and interview the minds behind the technological innovations changing the way we build. So strap in, enjoy the ride, and geek out. It's Contech Crew time.
All right. So if you heard our episode earlier this week, you're familiar with Charlie Dunn. If not, you're going to get a whole blast of his ideas as we go through the construction technology news of the week. I'm just going to go ahead and call it out. Some of you might be experiencing this new. That's right. We've cut the show in half. We're doing an interview section and we're going to do a news section to stay up to date and to allow a little more flexibility. We're going to try something new. And who else am I going to try something new with than these two guys right here? So if you didn't listen to our episode earlier this week, go back and tune in. You'll understand why experiences are so key. So, and having new ones with these two, well, that's what we
like. Yeah, so from Anta keynote at MEP Innovation to role-playing as opening keynote at AGCIT to, I don't even know what we're going to call this last one. Museum of Illusions.
Flow state.
It's
like an illusion flow state of chaos. Flow.
But yeah. All of them landed first time. So, and now what? And then this is what? It's just the Contech Crew in two parts. Is that what you're calling this thing?
Yeah, we're going to split it up. Everybody's drives have changed a little bit, just to be, you know, kind of clear. Everything out there has changed a little bit. And, you know, the data was speaking to us. So we said, okay, people don't have enough time to get the whole episode in and aren't picking back up right where they want. So let's do the interview. Let's do the news. Let's break it up a little bit and let's freshen it up. Plus then, you know, interviews are somewhat timeless, but news is very timely. So that was also something that wasn't aging well. You're behind the scenes a little bit, but there you go.
Are you trying to reach the innovators and decision makers in construction technology? Then look no further than sponsoring the Contech Crew. That's right, we're taking new advertisers. Email us at advertising@thecontechcrew.com to learn more.
So Nathan, with that, my friend, what do you have for us on the news side?
On that note, why not bring up a brand new article from the year of 2015, right? I picked this one specifically because Charlie's here. And again, if you haven't listened to the interview, hit that one first. But if you have and you're here, we talked a ton about the customer experience, the user, the field experience, the experience of each of these different individuals in the supply chain. So I found this article comes from the marketing world, but there's some pieces that I think we can hit on, some things, Charlie, I want to ask you about. The title of it from Forbes is Customer Experience is the Future of Marketing. So again, almost 10 years later, it's construction should be just about ready for this stuff. But again, the understanding that this is an era now, especially in construction, and I think DPR was definitely a pioneer in this, of this customer-centric framework, this, the owner really building that relationship and continuing to build more work and do things that those in the tech world had really done. And one of the things that they talk about here about why customer experience is really the key to success is because customers equate brands with experiences. And so they actually use the example of Apple. And again, I'm a fully Apple stack of product. Charlie, you mentioned earlier about this addiction to Apple and that it really doesn't matter what they charge. We're going to pay for it because we're kind of hooked in. And there was a lot of effort and a lot of work that went into doing that. That is really customer experiential marketing and building that brand. And so I think there's something that this industry can really learn around one, that the impact of negative versus positive experiences, that it says here that it takes 12 positive experiences to repair the damage caused by a single unresolved negative one. And you see in kind of the chat world, the review worlds, the Yelp worlds, those that do well do take so much time to respond back to all those negative critics to really maintain their brand image. And so, like, what does that mean for construction as a contractor? Charlie, I'm curious, you know, like, what your from your exposure of this, like how can contractors take from these notes here that I'm sure you believe in and apply them to our industry?
The point you shared, I think we were maybe offline, so I'll run it back real fast. Since 1997, I've negotiated probably on average at least every 2 years with a cell phone company for corporate plans or personal plans, or I've got a little small entity I've kept going, a small business plan that's mostly friends and family on it to try to, you know, try to beat the price. And every time I bought devices, it's been a fight. Like I wanted the cheapest price. And it is very analogous to what we do in construction, right? We show up and it's a fight for the cheapest price or for my rights to space over your rights or my schedule needs over yours or my delivery, right? Everything's a fight. I found myself yesterday for the first time ever getting new devices and I'm in an Apple store and I realized I have not thought once about the price. It was the value I wanted. And it was, hey, do I want the option to upgrade? And I have loved everything about this. And that was, to me, it was like, okay, this is a different experience. And I immediately called two guys this thing we're working on with Better Visual Planning. Like, how do we change the experience? How do we make the experience better? But now, Nathan, maybe to go a little controversial, because this is something I have been able to get over. What is the conference experience like?
Well, who's the customer, right? It using the whole product. Yeah, if you're free, what's the Apple quote?
If the product is free, then you're the product.
Exactly.
But the interesting thing, you hit on it there, Charlie, because that's what I wanted people to hear when I saw this article and these conversations we're having is we're trying to draw people in. And education is important, right? Showing contractors what's out there is important. But what we're missing in the industry itself is that exact shift. You now trust from your experience with the products that there is something you value and that you're willing to pay for that value and that that's not actually the biggest component. We're trying to teach construction that exists as well. And this is what I think is so cool because it exists in many compartments. It exists in the overall design and delivery of a project in the totality. It also exists between designers and owners. The experience does. The experience between designers and general contractors, between general contractors and trade contractors, between trade contractors and manufacturers and suppliers. It exists everywhere, and we're expecting a giant change, and we're not actually in equipping people to change that experience. And this is, in my opinion, where tech comes in and gets wrong. They go, oh, no, we'll just change that experience for you. Again, if you want to go back to the episode before, we've realized you can't do that. That's not how it works. So it's interesting to me. And I think the experience of a brand is really important. That's the other thing that I think teams in tech get wrong. And you know me, I've been on my high horse about this for a while, is you cannot grow as a platform, grow as a product, if you don't grow as a brand and bring a different experience, right? If you're toe-to-toe, feature for feature with someone, you're not going to stand out. And it's not going to allow you to grow. One of the most interesting things, Charlie, I think you said this at one point to me, is like, Jeff, it's not about what we do today. It's about being ready for what we might have to do tomorrow. What we might have to do in the future. Are our businesses, are our products, our platforms positioned in a way that we can guide them through that we can grow as products, whether that's a contractor that's growing, a trade partner, a software company, right? That's the key to this experience, is designing it in a way that allows for growth and allows for a future you just can't predict.
Right. Or a future that the pace of change is greater because of fundamental technologies that enable that pace of change. But then are you ready to embrace that, embrace it in a way that doesn't hurt people, that doesn't create unintended consequences. I've stumbled onto some thinking around something called reinvention. And the data is kind of surprising. You know, in the 50s through 70s, a company could have a business plan and a model that would work for like 70 to 90 years. And then in the 80s and 90s, that kind of halved and halved again. And now today, literally, there are some companies where they're reinventing in less than 12 months. And when you look at construction, our ability to reinvent has not been great. But as materials change, as we begin to get some of the different of technology, as we understand and do more offsite, that ability to do the new ways efficiently, we're gonna have to step up our game.
Well, and you connected it to why at one point in there too, and I think that's an interesting one for all companies must define their why, because a lot of the companies back in those days that it would last for 50, 60, 70 years, they actually didn't understand their why. They had a thing they did, and that thing continued to produce. We are so much at the experience moment and the pace of change moment with technology that enables that change, that it's now more than ever important to know why you exist more than it is what you do. And that why can drive you to completely change your business model tomorrow. You know, and you're going to have to, like you said, there are trade contractors right now that are going to be more manufacturers in the future than they ever were in the past. General contractors must be willing and able to change completely what they do. I think, you know, we've sat down and knuckled into this a little bit at times, maybe not enough on the show, but, you know, what a general contractor does, there's people who predict it will go away. I don't believe that. I believe it will fundamentally and foundationally change. But how are you ready for that if you don't know why you do what you do? You know, what is the experience you're trying to bring, and why do you do that?
Yeah, and I want to get this out here, because as Nathan asked the question it on experience and what we try to do in construction, I'm fortunate to work on pursuits, particularly large projects with owners that kind of have an enterprise program for how they want to build. And that's very important to me, because fundamentally, value is defined by the customer. And if I can work with customers that define value the way we believe value should be defined, we're going to be a lot more successful. But my simple thing often we'll do some type of round robin, icebreaker or outro, like, hey, what does success at the end of this project look like to you? And my answer is very simple. Everybody engaged in the project can go to a dinner and we have a toast and it's, hey, this was fun. Let's go do it together again. And because when you get that, you've won. And that ties to a guy that I imagine Nathan bumped into, Mike Ford. When I joined DPR, late 2016, early 2017, I saw some data and some metrics. And then we had an Arizona business unit that by an outlier percentage was better on schedule and on an estimate metric than every other region. And the cynic in me immediately said, oh, I got to go to Arizona and find out how they're cheating or had they really figured something out? And later, Mike Ford, who'd been influenced from that business unit, came to an opening of a new cool office in Charlotte, which anybody listening, if you're coming to Charlotte, reach out to me. The location of our Charlotte office is awesome. It's a wonderful place to entertain. I'll meet you there. We'll have a great time. But so Mike was there. And I got to ask him this question. You know, he kind of laughed and he said, yeah, he said, I'd like to tell you that we were really smarter than everybody else. And we had some smart people. He said, but we were able to tap into this fundamental dynamic that we built the right relationships with the right owners, which meant we were getting good projects at negotiated rates, which meant we were able to bring on good trade partners at fair rates. He said, and that fundamental relationship dynamic set us up for schedule and for financial success. And that's powerful. Like the experience, the human experience is maybe that forward indicator for some of the technical outcomes we want.
All right, 2 points, then I'll get to my next news. The first one, because I didn't bring this up in our interview section, One of my best analogies, I think, to justify the role of the general contractor moving forward, that they are not obsolete, that they will not go away, is if you think about a symphony orchestra, because Charlie, you're talking about the way that trade contractors work and kind of to be most efficient within what you do as different trades. Those are your different instruments, right? Like you can get the best violinist, you can get the best oboe player, you can get bits in the world, but they need a sheet of music. They need someone who's designed the work, all the designers. But the GC is that conductor. You need somebody that understands not how to play each of the instruments, but how they work and how they work within one another. And that is a whole different skill set than being the best in any individual given field. And so, yeah, we will always continue to have the need for this generalist. So point one. Point two, I think, and maybe DPR is one of the early ones in this, but I'll call it the freemium model to use tech terms. But I think GCs can use this freemium model where, again, the argument is always, oh, well, we can't win the job because we got to low bid it, whatever. So, well, yeah, you're going to, if it's the right owner that you want to build the right relationship with, you might have to eat the first project. That's why, you know, often there's small projects, you know, and different ways you can get your way in. But if you know that you're going to lose money on the first job, but you've accounted for that and have those goals of building that relationship, getting that next job, getting those negotiated rates, doing those things you just talked about, Charlie, I think, again, we say that that's hard, but if you put in the work, if you're intentional about it, there are examples where that's been done. And I think we need to get rid of that excuse of, oh, well, I can't because I work in a market where it's only hard bid and we kind of play this victim. And so, you know, hopefully there's a way, again, you're doing a bunch of these pursuits and different ways that we can move that stuff forward. But we need to move on because otherwise I'll take up all the time with news. So my second one here is a little bit more up to date in November of this year. So thank you, Kelsey Henderson and the Continuum Advisory Group for sharing this November 2024 construction spending update. So again, we can talk about numbers a little bit here, some highlights from her LinkedIn post. I see that office construction has declined by 27% from March of 2020 at its peak. I wonder what would have peaked and why it would have peaked in March of 2020. Something to do with a global pandemic. But excluding, not surprisingly, data center spending. And so data center now represents 34% of office spending. And I've always argued that we've got to figure out how to separate those because like a data center is not an office, guys. Like it's industrial, but again, off the point. Warehouse construction did drop from $75 billion to $60 billion, which again, we've had a ton of those going up in the Midwest. So it's interesting to see that that's starting to tail down. I think the last one there on an annual basis that construction spending was up 4.6% from this time last year. So again, Charlie, I know you're doing a bunch of pursuits and you're kind of out there in the world. What are you seeing? Are things ticking up, ticking down? What's your take on the market?
I experience more big projects. Some of that's driven by data centers. Is interesting, as I came into construction out of the nuclear industry, I thought I was observing the sunset of the nuclear industry in the United States due to regulation. And now, thanks to AI, here we go again. I would say early in time at DPR, you kind of got to read the tea leaves what's ahead. If you're not paying attention to carbon and you're not paying attention to water, you're going to miss some things. But now it's in no particular order, it's power and carbon and water. And so the number of projects where it's a data center campus plus it's a natural gas plant or plus, and there are multiples of these on the board, it's going to be some small modular reactors. So that the size and scale of some of what we're seeing is up. Definitely seeing continued investment and growth in life science, continued investment and growth in healthcare. So, you know, some of the core markets that we focus on, you know, it's really this tension of how much work and where's the talent coming from to do this work, which are, you know, good challenges to face. Definitely have experienced the drop off in office and, you know, there's some interesting things being considered for some of these urban spaces. You know, can they be refitted for life science? Small single use, can they be refitted for residential?
I was just gonna hit you there. That's what I just saw a news article on, was a real estate investor that was buying these things up because, Charlie, in the area they had figured out that a particular way of that the office buildings were built and the number of which were built could easily, they could create a plan that was repeatable across these buildings because they were designed so similar that they could easily turn them into housing units in a way that they could profit from it. And they bought them all up before anybody realized there was a method to the madness of what they were doing. I thought that was just super cool. Because I think, again, that's an opportunity, whether it becomes life sciences, whether it becomes, you know, some sort of housing, we need those things. So it'll be interesting to watch those numbers tick over time, Nathan. And, you know, obviously, like the warehouse construction, we saw a huge boom during the pandemic. And so it had to drop off, but they're saying it's going to continue to remain positive. What I think is interesting is like somewhat, and by the way, guys, go check out this data. I reference Clark Ellis a lot. I don't give Kelsey as much plugs as we should. Those two and their team at Continuum are doing fantastic work on data. Like if you need any research done or you just want to know real numbers, go check them out. We'll have the post, the link in the post, and it'll be linked over to the actual data itself. That they're calling for, every contractor I hear talks about, you know, off the charts backlogs, but they're talking modest growth for the year next year. So a little bit of that doesn't match up for me. I think it may be that we have fewer contractors and larger projects than we've had, but I think the overall spend is balancing itself a little bit. So numbers are numbers, right? They don't lie, but they don't tell a story themselves. It takes a storyteller to tell a story.
They don't lie. They just come from liars.
No. All right. Well, hey, we're going to move on because, you know, Charlie, you hit on this and you know, the AI is the boom. So we can't have a news segment if we don't talk about AI. But I thought this was interesting because it came from one of our own, you know, industry construction dive, which, you know, we refer to a lot here. But I've been trying to kind of stay away and freshen it up. But this was really cool. AI rush is fueling tech debt tsunami, according to Forrester. So this is interesting. The research highlights by Forrester of the growing challenges faced by businesses as they scramble to adopt AI and avoid falling behind competitors. So again, there is this rush to act and not plan because of a fear of falling behind, but not understanding that that rush to catch up is creating a mound of tech debt behind you. And I think it's interesting to understand when they talk about tech debt, they're not just referencing code. Like all code as it's designed needs to be refactored over time. Like you need to spend about 30% of your time refactoring what you've written so that your code doesn't completely age out. We used to talk about this in computers. You don't buy and replace every computer in the company every 3 years. That's a really non-sustainable process. What you need to do is replace about a third of the fleet every year because computers should be replaced about every 3 years if you're looking at, you know, best practices. And that way you're always in a constant process of getting rid of your tech debt. Same thing when it comes to your team's designing software. Part of them should be refactoring. This is also, though, talking about infrastructure. It's talking about your switching. Things people don't talk about that run those data centers. You're right, Nathan. There's very few people in those data centers, but there's a lot of routers. There's a lot of switch gear. There's a lot of firewalling. There's a lot of crazy stuff in there and chipsets, et cetera. And you have that inside your infrastructure of your construction company, of your technology company right now. And if you are rushing to build something new, there's a chance that you're creating a dumpster fire behind you. So, Charlie, I'm interested because, you know, we don't talk tech debt as much in our world, but I'd be interested to get your thoughts on it.
Well, I guess maybe because it's a pain that's real to me. Are you standing up more and more things without fundamentally solving like integration and, you know, so you're creating even more silos is the concern I have when you start about construction, to make it really tangible. I've had this conversation with people cause you were getting all these internet of things, sensor AI kind of things. I'm like, okay, what's our fundamental integration opportunity? Because right now we already have too many tools for a field team to look at with our current, you know, set of technology partners and lack of integration. Now, if I stand up IoT, like how many dashboards unique to each IoT vendor are we gonna have to look at to understand what's going on? So that's what first came to mind, is that there's also this debt on your integration strategy.
That's a key, right? That's a key factor that I might have rushed to create this whole new or buy this whole new AI platform, but if it's creating yet another silo for me, or honestly is not working correctly because it doesn't have access to all of that data through integration. So Nathan, I know you want to jump in here. This is your world.
Yeah, that sounds like a separate category, because as I'm reading here in the article, technical debt refers to the cost incurred from putting off technology upgrades or modernization. But we're also talking about the cost of spending on modernization when you're not ready, which is really a waste. So it's like technical debt on top of technical waste. And I'm sure we probably haven't moved the needle too far on that. What we spend 1% of our budget on IT costs versus, you know, other industries that are closer to 3%, or we should be, you know, three times that number. So I think it's a compounding problem of we're not spending money on upgrading and maintaining what we should, but we are spending that money on these, you know, kind of eye candy things that aren't going to actually solve our problem. It's really leading to what I feel like is that AIG moment of, for those who went through 2007, 2008, of like, holy cow, how can an entire industry just crumble? And that will be construction with data. But again, not to be doomsday. Somebody say something lighter.
Or to Charlie's grand vision, we could actually create an enterprise data model for construction. Imagine that for a second. You know, what would that really look like? What could that bring us?
Yeah, come to CPC and help us figure that out.
Yes. We're talking to you, Pete Dumont and Dixon Wright and all you crazy heads out there that are trying to do this in blockchain and BIM and other ways.
Well, last but certainly not least, this one was interesting for me. Contra4 raises a Series A. So I'm going to be honest. When I saw $264 million, I freaked out. I thought, did I miss something here? Like, great company. Anwar was on the show, the CEO, a while back. But this is an interesting one because what they did in their Series A matches kind of what they do as a company. So it's actually only $14 million in equity. So $14 million in what we normally think of as a raise. That's money they can spend and invest on changing the software, pushing it forward, growing the sales team, growing the marketing team, growing the entire, you know, operationalizing the process. But $250 million in credit facility to solve construction's industry challenges. And if you look at what Contra4 is about, they're basically making payments up front for people. So how many times has, you know, the speed to getting paid been one of the biggest factors in why we're either inflating cost or why companies are going under? So what Contra4 is kind of based on is you can be, if you're on the platform, then you can get paid for work ahead by Contra4 itself as a banking entity. And it's a little complicated if you want to go listen to how they're built, look at Anwar. But I imagine this allows them to grow the amount of people they can put on that platform because they need that amount of available credit. So yeah, they're taking points back on it, but it's an agreed upon number of points that they're getting paid off. And the value of getting your cash up front to most contractors is huge. I mean, think about this. There was a CFMA study, and I heard it at a CFMA a couple of years back, that like 80% of all trade contractors that go out of business are profitable at the time. It's a cash flow problem because they're waiting to get paid, right? Charlie, I wanted to tee this up for you. This is the reality that, you know, our world is built on the backs of trade contractors. And this is a way for them to at least get their money up front, and a cool raise for Contra4. And we could talk a little bit about what I think for, you know, we'll have a couple of minutes to talk about 2025 and that world. But what are your thoughts on a platform like this that's, you know, enabling that and maybe relieving some of it, but a little bit of, you know, what's going on in that world right now?
Well, they're going after a very important problem. You already mentioned Pete Dumont and CPC, but some of that research out of the neighborhood and this focus on 41% financial transaction waste, where layer upon layer, or because of payment terms and because of likely having to e-change or whatever, like we layer this financial transaction cost on, and it's a real threat to the the value of the capital. So if they figure out a way to solve this, my mind's going back. I'm drawing a blank on the name of the company. I was first introduced to them in 2018. They had some bad bets, and I don't know that they're still an ongoing entity. But kind of similarly in the United Kingdom, these guys had figured out how to get people funding faster. And so access to money. But anyway, the guy ended up being knighted by the Queen because of the amount of capital they unlocked with this simple getting money to people faster. So it's a very real thing. We're an industry that pushes risk down. And so you have these trade partners that carry the brunt of the risk, often, you know, financially cash flow, you know, vault position is not as great. But they're bringing the labor that's required to do the real work. So it is to me it is a very unfortunate thing, and it touches me. One, you know, something we hit on prior section, but hey, getting that knowledge earlier, but then now financially making sure that they're compensated fairly, and then even coming out of the event in Denver, I'm not like you guys. I don't get to as many of the big events. My first and only AU was 2008. My first and only Oracle Open World was 2016. I used to go to these Oracle Industry Connect things, and there was an Oracle user group thing in Vegas. Those were my biggest events, like 6,000 people. But that was all the database guys. It wasn't just construction. You know, and this was my first Procore groundbreak. But one of the things that hit me was, wow, this is a cool show from the trappings and the signage and the trade show floor. But this is all built on the back of trade partners doing work in the field. And are we really spending where it matters? And I know there are a lot of well-meaning people that want the industry to get better. But like to me, it was like, how many people here own a pair of dirty boots or have ever owned a pair of dirty boots? Versus how many are opportunistic. And that's kind of, I think, where you were, Jeff, on this investment and this raise, like the venture capital money that's flowing in. How do we make sure we create the fair opportunity for the people really doing the work?
That's where I wanted you to go. And by the way, it is just insane to me that you've only been to one AU and one groundbreak. And I am going to give a little shout out to ourselves, because Nathan, Charlie, and I did something called Coffee and Chaos with a group called Veil.
Well, this is news, right? Like
this is news.
Yeah, we're sharing news here.
Something had not been done before. Yep.
We did something that's never been done before at the Museum of Illusions in Denver downtown. We did a 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. flow state experience with Legos, et cetera. So you guys heard us talk a little bit about it. But Charlie, we put it out there before it hit. And like you said, sometimes you got to put out big things to have big. And you said, what if the best session at Groundbreak wasn't actually at Groundbreak? And Clarissa Burke came to us. She came and she sent us a message to the team at Veil Sun that said, you know, have a wonderful Thanksgiving. Wanted to thank you for the Coffee and Chaos event. It was my favorite part of the conference this year. You all did an amazing job. Hope to attend more events like this one in the future. So if you're listening and you're out there, and AU, Groundbreak, Oracle, the world's changing. The experiences are changing. We've got to do this differently. And I have had the pleasure of doing things differently with the three of you. And so I thought I'd end it with some thoughts on 2025. I think from a financial perspective, we see some good growth. I think you're going to see some more investments. But I think if we want to change this industry, we're going to have to focus on experience.
Experience and messaging, I think, yeah, on top of that, I would add messaging, because so much of this is around different narratives, different stories of what this is really all about. And I think we've been really hitting on a lot of our points, but to be consistent in our narrative, to get, you know, those within our community kind of, you know, all rowing in the same direction of this, you know, what does it mean to go slow before you go fast? What are some of these mindsets that, and how do we, I don't want to say preach, because we just said that preaching is not right. We got to do experience first before, you know, like preaching is nothing. That's just standing up on a pulpit, right? So how do you get people in the room through, I think, just the awe and the curiosity, right? The fact that we're not sharing everything that's going on, because you can't until you go through it to really experience it. So I guess that's my biggest takeaway, is that, you know, like the messaging is the word of mouth through those that go through the experience, maybe.
Yeah. Charlie?
Well, I also want to give a shout out to Nick Caravella, who's my single best Wookiee Chewbacca ever. Like, he punked me. And I'm not going to tell the story here, but you find me, I'll tell you the story, because it's legendary and I've got to make sure I tell it right at the right time. But he posted, he said, to keep up with construction demands, we need to build a new New York City every 40 days. If there is one quote that's been keeping me up since Procore Technology Groundbreak 24, it had to be this insight shared by Charlie Dunn at the Vail Sun Inc. Coffee and Chaos Breakfast, the Denver Museum of Illusions. Like, that's what I'm going after. Like, that landed and it keeps you up at night, because the problems we're facing, they're that significant and there's the opportunity to work on them. But now I want to circle back to me, what's news about doing this event, and it's kind of amplified by what I've heard in person, a fireside chat with Duncan Wardle, who, if you don't know Duncan, look him up. If you go to an event or crash an event where he's speaking, take advantage of it. But I was able to ask him about what he would do with conferences, because I'd heard him in some public forums say things about, because he goes to all kinds of industries in their events. He said, I would smash it all to bits. Like, nobody learns anything in 1 hour. We've got to get rid of the panel of doom, where the lights are only on four people sitting on the stage and the whole audience is in the dark. And so, Nathan, what you've done with CPC, he said, you got to work on real problems, like at a minimum in a day, right? So CPC is 2 days plus of, you know, design thinking and workshopping. He said, you've got to give people a problem and let them work on solving the problem. And that's what we do with these various simulations with flow state. And then one other nugget that, again, makes this newsworthy is because we're validating research that Lego did on how people learn. And the irony of Lego Serious Play, I've been able to read now and met some people involved in it. Got by the name of Rasmussen wrote a really good book on Serious Play for Business. But Lego realized their own internal meetings were terrible. And they said, what should we do about this? Like, we're Lego. We should not have bad meetings. And so the genesis of that was, could we use Lego to have better meetings? And there's a lot there. I'm not going to pack it. But one simple thing, a goal to shift from an 80-20 meeting. And this, now I'm going to come back and laser focused at what's wrong with conferences, where 80% of the people don't really engage and 20% of the people are doing all the talking, or Nathan, all the messaging. That's fundamentally flawed. So you want to create an experience with something like Lego where 100% of the people are 100% engaged. And that, I think, we saw happen at the Museum of Illusions in Denver. That everybody that came through there, even though it was the last day, even though it was 7 a.m., they're 100% in.
Yeah, everybody was. And I'm going to let you drop the mic there, Charlie, except I am going to add, I'm putting this on my 2025 to do. I'm going to start looking down for the dirty boots in the room, and I want the dirty boot ratio to go up. And I'd be honest, and I've always said this, I'm an IT guy. My boots aren't as dirty as others. I still have gone to job sites. I've talked to the people. I've met them there. But I'm going for the dirty boot quotient in 2025. And with that, thanks, guys, for sitting down and talking to me about the news this week and joining me on the show and joining me on the journey. I'm super excited for 2025.
Thank you, Jeff. Thanks, Charlie.
Thank you for tuning in today for our Construction Technology News of the Week with Charlie Dunn and Nathan Wood. To read all our news stories, learn more about our guests, and to listen to this show, visit thecontechcrew.com. This is the Contech Crew signing out. Until next time, enjoy the ride and geek out.